The fans have spoken, they've told us what they want, and congratulations, the Ron Van Dam Show is now 1 hour long.
I can't do this for an hour, I'll die.
Okay, not an hour. 40 minutes?
I'll die.
Okay, we'll just go until it's nap time. You're listening to the Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting.
Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening. Good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Thank you. You're welcome. Welcome to the program. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. I am the person whose name fits in the title perfectly between the and show. How did that happen? I don't know. It's wonderful. It's good to be with you on this Monday morning. Look at the time. Why, just yesterday it seems like it was Sunday. Can you believe that? Yeah, it's the 23rd of November. Holy crap. It's almost Thanksgiving, and then it'll be almost like Easter. Ooh, ooh. Okay, welcome to the program. Thanks for being here. You are welcome. Okay, about a week ago, I did a show about history, how much I hate it. History sucks because... it's never good. It's never good. History is never good. All we learn about in school and history are wars. Wars and incredible conflicts where many people died. This is what we learn about. And all the information about these wonderful people in our history, turns out they weren't so wonderful. They were abusive idiots. So I don't know how we got this far, to be honest with you. Of course, the worst character in history will end up being Donald Trump, second to you-know-who, or maybe the other way around. But, I mean, seriously, this is awful. It's just, and still remains awful. Anyway, that's going to be a part of history as well. Will Donald Trump have a presidential library? No. He'll have a presidential tweet file. But library, that involves books. Come on, man. The only book Trump ever wrote, he didn't write. Unbelievable. What a moron. Anyway, how did some of you do this to me? How did some of you actually do this to me? Anyway, I see a light at the end of the tunnel. How far that light is away from where I am in the tunnel right now is another question. But I do see a light finally in all regards. So that's something. But sometimes to get to that light, you have to go through a lot of crap first. And I have a feeling I may be knee-deep in it right now. I don't know. I just want to do this really quick, and then I won't say another word about it. Be so careful over Thanksgiving, and then I'll remind you again for Christmas. It makes all the difference in the world. It makes all the difference in the world. And if you're an American, you have a responsibility to your country, and that responsibility is to be freaking damn careful. Really careful. I mean really careful. Your tood makes all the difference in the world for all of us. Respect us in this country, please. No matter what your feelings are about this thing, respect other people's feelings. That's the one thing we're missing in this country, respect for other people's feelings. Don't have it. Don't have it. That got washed away in the tide. Hopefully some of that will come back. Anyway, I don't care for history. So I sought out this particular author, who is going to join us momentarily. He's written a book about history that I kind of like, and this should replace all history books in classrooms. It's about the greatest historical blunders ever made, and I did not know these things existed, and they're true. So it's going to be a fascinating interview. I'm looking forward to it. It's coming up momentarily. In the meantime, I'm more concerned about your health. Are you okay? Oh my God. I went to the supermarket early this morning. I go at 6 o'clock in the morning because nobody else is in the supermarket. And that's the way, I like it. Sure, I have to get up early, but I do anyway. So it's no sweat off my teeth. So I go in there and I get my various items and I put them in the cart. And then I go to the cashier, the checkout lane, and a very nice woman standing there. And there's a bagger. She wasn't really pretty. She was a double bagger, as a matter of fact. And she was standing next to this girl, and she was bagging the groceries and doing a fine job of it, man. She knew which things went in one bag and which ones. And, you know, it's not a stupid job. It's an art. It's an art to know which things are going to go into the refrigerator, which items are going to go into your freezer, which ones are going to go into the pantry if you even have a pantry. That's a smart bagger, man. That is a smart bagger. And when things are heavy, like milk cartons and things, she double bags them. Oh my God, marry me. So they're checking out my stuff, and the cashier turns her head a little bit all of a sudden and goes, don't do that in the middle of a pandemic in front of me. She did turn her head. She's wearing a mask. I'm wearing a mask. And I felt immediately uncomfortable. I started breathing very shallowly, just in case, man. Now, I know people have allergies. The weather's getting crazy. Sometimes it's hot, then it's cold, then it's hot, then it's cold. So one might develop a little sniffle or something. It doesn't mean that you have the corona thing. But it certainly causes me to pause. So she continues, and the double bagger is doing her job, and then all of a sudden she turns her head and coughs as well. Not a huge bellowing cough, but enough of one for me to realize this is not a good place for me to be. Probably not. Perhaps it's fine. Perhaps it's not. It concerned me greatly. So I started breathing through my ears. I didn't know you could do that, but apparently you can when you're like panicking. I couldn't wait to get out of that supermarket. As I clear my throat. Okay, there you go. Let me clear my throat. It's impossible. When this pandemia thing began, I remember this so clearly. Oh my God. I have allergies every once in a while, especially in the morning when I do this show. It's a normal thing. I've had it for like 10, 15 years. So I know it. But when I started coughing shortly after the pandemia began, and I ran to my bathroom and got out a thermometer and see if I had a temperature. And I was very concerned. Oh my God, I got it. I'm going to die, which is actually a possibility. Unfortunately, that's a possibility. Well, I didn't have it, and I haven't since, and I hope never do. But oh my God, even after this thing is gone and the light has arrived at the end of the tunnel, I think most of us will still be damn careful no matter where we go. I really think that'll be the case. Anyway, I didn't want to talk about it, so therefore I shall not. But how are you? Seriously, you doing all right? Man, I'm telling you. I am telling you. All right, we're going to learn a little bit about history right now and what actually happened and some of the horrible events that took place and the surrounding circumstances. That's going to happen momentarily. And as we do so, oh my God. Remember Paul Revere? Yeah. He was the one there in the Boston area. When the British were coming, Paul Revere was supposed to go up to a tower in a church and shine some lights, you know. I don't know, they have flashlights or lanterns. I think it was lanterns probably. I'm playing stupid in order to reach my audience. No, I'm sorry. I'm only kidding. Not you, the person next to you. So everybody would know if it was they were coming, the British were coming, the British are coming, the British are coming. One if by land, two if by sea, three if by bus. And But they didn't, he didn't have three lanterns, but they were coming by bus. And that was, isn't it weird that the British were known as the Redcoats because that was their military garb. They wore red. Hello. Do you ever hear camouflage, British people?
Well, I haven't. I guess we missed that one by a mile. By making our uniforms red, I guess we showed up quite a bit.
Yes, you kind of made yourself easy targets, kind of. Blunder, perhaps. Perhaps a large one. Now, I don't know if they actually wore red coats, but I understand that they did, and my understanding is certainly enough for me. Well, Thanksgiving is just around the corner, and so is our guest. But first, you don't want to mess up your dining room table when you have nobody over anyway. So are you thinking about placemats by any chance?
Do you know that there is one item that can not only increase your home's beauty, but its value? That would be placemats. Hello, I'm George Karanapikopoulos, owner of George K's Wholesale Placemat Warehouse, your one stop for all your placemat needs. We have a placemat for every room of your house. That's right, placemats are not just for the dining room anymore. Anywhere you might make a spill, or maybe where you eat, like in front of the TV. I do it all the time like you. You want a placemat. We have fancy placemats, like in bamboo or teak. That's right, teak. Nice plastic laminate ones for no stains, even blue. We can custom make you placemats in as little as 2 weeks. Come to our showroom at the intersection of Route 27 and the Holbrook Turnpike. You're going to like what you see. Your placemat is waiting for you at George K's Wholesale Placemat Warehouse.
Jared Knott joins us. He has authored a book called Tiny Blunders, Big Disasters. 39 tiny mistakes that changed the world forever. And I'm sure there's more than 39, but I guess we couldn't hit 40.
there's more. We had a spillover. We had several mistakes we didn't get in the book, but that'll be for the sequel.
There you go. You got to save it for the sequel. I'm sure there are plenty left. We've been living through one of the biggest blunders for the past year, and also in another sense for the past 4 years. So, so I get it. This is. You know, I never enjoyed history in school because it was just too direct and straight and all that. And now,
dry and dull. Yeah,
exactly. You've taken history and you kind of made it. I wouldn't say fun, but relevant.
Now most history books are kind of just a straight drill down. A book on Eisenhower just goes through his life and so on and so forth. This is a little bit different. It kind of takes it from a different angle, a different perspective altogether. And the best way, I think, of capturing the essence of the book is going back to that original quotation in the book there from Benjamin Franklin, that for want of a nail, the shoe was lost. For want of the shoe, the rider was lost. The rider was lost. The battle was lost. The battle of the empire. I got a cat here who wants to get out of the room here. Okay. Excuse me. So anyway.
Franklin said, I got a cat that has to get out of the room?
I digress.
Okay.
I digress a little bit. But anyway, the empire was lost all for the want of a nail. Yeah. Well, how often does that really happen, that a single tiny mistake causes an entire empire to collapse? I think the reader will be amazed how often it happens over and over again.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the basic concept there. But I can give you some relevant examples if you would like.
Yeah, I mean, the one I'm curious about the most is Hitler. I mean, we're trying to understand what made this guy tick.
Yes, it's funny. Now, this is kind of a little bit of an aside there. He was said to be a 1/4 Jewish. His grandmother was a maid in a Jewish household, and she became pregnant, and she never did admit who the father was. So it may have been a little bit of a... something called reaction formation or Adlerian overcompensation, since we have a very intelligent audience there in Boston.
Oh, absolutely.
It's okay to use more literary terms, he may have been have kind of a, by the way, if you remember, it was some of the other, there's also, I think Goebbels may have had the same sort of thing, he thought of himself as kind of looking Jewish, and Adolf Eichmann, he looked, quote unquote, looked Jewish, and that was one of the things he was involved in, so that maybe kind of a go to the opposite extreme kind of thing going on with him, but he was described as having a manic personality.
Yeah.
Talked about Adolf Hitler. But yeah. Getting one of the key things in the book was that it said, it's in the portrait gallery there, did Hitler's overriding need for vengeance cause him to miss an opportunity to win the war, even in the late stages?
Really?
And he was made emotional decisions. He had a core belief that the world belongs to the brave, and he would always go to the extreme solution in any particular situation. But anyway, the V-1s and V-2s, okay, the two rockets there, developed by German scientists, Hitler chose to drop them on London, killing grandmothers and children and so on and so forth like that, striking vengeance at the English people. After the war, Eisenhower said that if they had been dropped at Plymouth and Weymouth and the embarkation points for the D-Day invasion, the invasion would have to have been postponed.
Oh.
Well, they began about 1 week after the invasion began, so that might have meant a complete collapse of the entire invasion effort, because all the I'll tell you a quick anecdote. Eisenhower was driving through Plymouth in a Jeep with his son, who just graduated from West Point, there with him in the front seat. And his son, John, was looking around, wow, massive concentrations of gasoline, of trucks, of men, of supplies. It's a good thing we have control of the air, or the Germans could do massive damage to our entire effort. Mm-hmm. And General Eisenhower somewhat irritably said, well, if we didn't have massive control, complete control of the air, I would not allow this concentration to take place.
Mm-hmm.
But he was thinking about conventional bombers and conventional fighter bombers. He was not thinking about V-1s and V-2s and missiles.
Yeah.
That was no concept of that. There was 12,000 of those missiles that were dropped on London. They'd been dropped on Plymouth.
Wow.
The entire invasion would have collapsed, and the outcome of the war could have been changed.
Yeah, but it was done for an emotional reason.
Emotional reasons, that's right. That very vengeful, hate-filled man who made a lot of stupid mistakes, thank God.
Wow, I think I'm living through history now. That's scary. The analogy's a little scary, if you don't mind me saying.
Sure.
Yeah. What are some other, what we would call tiny mistakes that turned into be like a wow?
Yeah, yeah. Here's one example. Kind of the teaser is a single piece of tape rotated several inches the wrong direction, changed the outcome of the Vietnam War.
Wow.
The United States might very well have won, except for this single tiny mistake, which doesn't make any sense, does it?
Mm-hmm.
What are we talking about?
Yeah.
Single piece of tape. Well, it has to do with the Watergate break-in. The burglars were told to put the hold down the striker in the door. They jimmied the lock from the parking garage into the building.
Mm-hmm.
They were told to hold down the striker on the door with a single piece of vertical tape so it could not be seen from the outside. They made the mistake, and they put it in the horizontal position across the door face. So the night watchman, Frank Wills, walking down the hallway with tape on the door. What is this? Oh, the door's been jimmied, so on and so forth. He calls the police, okay? That leads to the Watergate arrests of James McCord and the Cuban burglars.
Yes.
It leads to the collapse of Nixon administration. Now, they had said, Kissinger was saying in the interview, that they knew the North Vietnamese were going to be violating the treaty. The plan was to go back in there and bomb the daylights out of them again and get them back into compliance. But they were so weak politically, they couldn't. So South Vietnam collapses, Nixon administration collapses, all because of a single piece of tape turned several inches the wrong direction.
Wow.
And here's a little footnote with that. Also, this rumor is that when they called into the police, they called a uniformed officer to go check out the burglary that was taking place at the Watergate Hotel office complex. But that particular officer was intoxicated in a local bar, was unable to respond to the call. So they sent the bum patrol there instead, guys, officers dressed as hobos, driving an old jalopy. When they pulled up in front of the Watergate, the lookout did not recognize them as police, and so he didn't alert them, the burglars on the inside, until it was far too late. If it had been a uniformed officer, sober, he would have called in right away. They might have gotten away. So there are two tiny mistakes. A drunk officer, and a tape turned wrong direction, which changed everything massively.
Wow. So, whoa. Wow. That's like the domino effect. What is that thing where...
Exactly.
Tell me about the Titanic. I know that's something, one of the points that you hit, and there was a very interesting thing with Murphy's Law.
Yes, yes. there was a combination of mistakes that led to the sinking of the Titanic. Mm-hmm. But the one that's the most, I think, interesting is that there was glasses or binoculars, mm-hmm. we would call them. They would call them glasses at the time. And they were somehow lost. So the lookouts up there in the crow's nest, looking out across the dark Atlantic, had to just use their naked eye to be able to identify icebergs.
Oh.
The particular iceberg was a dark, kind of a black, or they call it dark iceberg,
mm-hmm.
and they couldn't see it till it was too late. There are other mistakes. The great big propellers in the back of the ship were actually too small for the size of the ship,
yeah.
so it turned too slowly. But anyway, in the investigation afterwards, they asked the people in the crow's nest, if you had the binoculars, would that have made a difference? Yes. How much of a difference? Well, in plenty of time to see the iceberg and to be able to turn the ship to avoid the entire collision. So the whole thing could have been avoided. They think they lost the key to the locker that held the binoculars, and so they couldn't get to it, and so they didn't have the binoculars, so they didn't see the iceberg, so it sank the ship, and the 1,500 people go down to the bottom, not that many, but the hundreds of people went down yeah. to the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah. Jared Knott, how did you get into this? I mean, your facts are incredibly interesting. Why did you decide to go down that road?
Well, it's funny. I was just thinking one day, I was thinking if I could start off with the Watergate example. Gee, that one little tiny mistake made a huge, huge difference, changed the outcome of a war. And then I was thinking about, I have read history, and then, there's another example. That's another little tiny mistake that changed the outcome of the war, and just they started accumulating. I was saying, well, this might make a good magazine article, but they kept accumulating and accumulating. You'd find one more and another one and add to the collection and say, wow, this could make an interesting book. And so it just kind of topsy just grew and got bigger and bigger. But would you like another example?
Yes, I would love one.
Yes, this is kind of interesting. The teaser there is a single document poorly designed by one single clerk in one single county changed the outcome of a presidential election and led directly to a major war.
Uh-oh.
Okay, and the war would not have taken place without this single tiny mistake.
Uh-oh.
Okay, well, what are we talking about? Well, it goes back to the 2000 election. It's not the hanging chads in Florida. It's something different. In the Palm Beach County, a lady named Teresa Lepore wanted to design a ballot with large print so the older people there could read the ballot easily.
Mm-hmm.
And she designed this ballot. It's two pages, a list of candidates on the left page and a list of candidates on the right page with a series of punch holes down the center.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, it was a poorly designed ballot because Al Gore's name was the number two name on the list, but he was the number three punch hole.
I see.
Number two punch hole
God.
For the opposite page was Pat Buchanan. Well, okay, Pat Buchanan in surrounding counties got 100 or 200 votes. In that particular county, he gets something like 5,000 votes because people are mistaking his punch hole.
Wow.
And they would see that they punched the wrong hole, and then they punched the Al Gore's hole too, so they double punched it, which invalidated the ballot. But anyway, Al Gore would have gotten 2 or 3, maybe as many as 7,000 more votes out of Palm Beach County. He lost the state of Florida by 456 votes. He would have won Florida. He would have won the presidential election, and he was adamantly opposed to the war in Iraq, just 100% opposed to the war in Iraq. The war would not have taken place. We have 50,000 dead people. We have $3 trillion down the drain. And they were interviewing Teresa Lepore on one of the morning shows back at the time.
Yes.
They were saying to her, people are saying that you're responsible for this war.
Right.
And she was crying. Oh, 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 oh. Well, okay, you're crying, madam, but we got 50,000 dead people.
Yeah.
And we got $3 trillion down the drain because of that single tiny mistake.
Wow. What was
that? A picture of it.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
What, was that not discovered at the time?
No, it wasn't realized. I'm sure from the people designing it, it was perfectly clear, but from someone seeing the ballot for the first time, it was very, very confusing.
Right.
And it went to court. The court was not willing to reverse it, and so it stood. And no question that, I mean, there's just really no question that the Al Gore would have won Florida, and the history would have gone in a completely different direction. Our huge involvement in the Middle East and that war would not have taken place.
Unbelievable.
So,
Wow, that floors me, because I know what happens when you choose the wrong person as president. That's, oh, my God.
Yes, and from her standpoint, I mean, it's perfectly clear. There are little arrows there and so on and so forth, because she's familiar with the ballot.
Right.
Someone like, say, someone seeing it for the first time. And let me throw in a little aside here.
Yeah.
that I've never seen or heard anyplace else from anyone else, and that is that there are two wars we could have avoided in the last 60 years. I'm going to say the war in Vietnam was completely unnecessary, and the war in Iraq was completely unnecessary. Right. And I'm from Texas. In both cases, we had a Texas president. Okay, and again, yes. I'm from Texas, yes. And there's something about Texans and war, the Alamo and the whole thing. Mm-hmm. But anyway, if we had had a president from Massachusetts, from Vermont or Wisconsin or something like that, I think both of those battles, those wars, would not have taken place, and the world would be a different place. So I'm proud to be from Texas, but that's just a little aside there.
Well, you know, now your book's getting scary. maybe this should be a Halloween book. I mean, because, wow, that's tiny little mistakes can go a long way, especially when it's one of power and one of consequence.
Yes. Now, I will, at the conclusion, I do give you a cheerful example of how a giant mistake was avoided. I want to make it funny.
Okay.
You know, I give him a queasy stomach, but yeah. Kind of interesting. There was a major airborne drop that was going to take place in Rome. The Italians are going to change sides. They're going to leave the Germans and join the Allies. Big drop. Well, it was clear Matthew Ridgway, the general of the 82nd Airborne, was very suspicious of the whole plan. And he managed to persuade Eisenhower to allow a general named Maxwell Taylor to go in undercover. He and another officers were parading as though they were POWs, okay, to check out, are the Italians really going to do this? Is this really going to work? Well, meeting with the Italians were reneging on the entire operation. They didn't have enough gasoline. The Germans were suspicious of them anyway. They were not going to be able to join the Allied airborne invasion. It was going to be a suicide attack. It was going to be a total disaster. So he sends back the code message, situation innocuous, which means you're supposed to cancel the entire thing. It was not going to work. And Eisenhower gets the message, and he's just outraged. And he starts to write out the message to his troops to cancel the invasion. He's so angry, he breaks the pencil. And he gets another pencil, and he's so angry, he breaks that pencil. So he has to dictate his message. So anyway, they send the word over there, cancel the entire airborne drop into the Rome area. Right. And the planes are warming up out on the tarmac. And so the Pathfinder planes are already in the air. General comes running out there, waving his hands, stop, 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 cancel the entire invasion. And so it was thousands of lives that were saved that would have been lost to no purpose. They got to survive to be fathers and grandfathers, but they came within a whisker of a complete disaster, which could have destroyed Eisenhower's career. And at the end, the two of the generals got to Maxwell, Ridgway and another general, sat down with a bottle of liquor and just cried because they came so close to death for them and for thousands of men.
Wow. Well, the tiniest things can be the biggest. These are some excerpts from Tiny Blunders, Big Disaster, Tiny Blunders That Changed the World Forever. He's Jared Knott. Jared, do you have a website where people can follow you?
Absolutely. If they will go to tinyblundersbigdisasters.com or tinyblundersbigdisasters.org, either one, we have a fun website there. The portrait gallery is, I think, the most fun part of the book and the most fun part of the website. I have a picture of about 26 different historical figures, and when you hover the mouse over the picture, a bold statement jumps forward. For example, Robert E. Lee, okay, and it's just a picture of Robert E. Lee. You hover the mouse, and the bold statement jumps forward and says, "Most people do not realize how close the South came to winning the war." Okay, and that was a very interesting chapter also about Antietam Creek. And then there are many others. There's one about a famous airplane crash, airline crash that cost the lives of two men but saved the lives of thousands because of the safety procedures that were put in place, et cetera, et cetera. But we got Hitler there, we've got Goebbels there, and we've got Eisenhower and so on and so forth. Wow. But it's kind of a fun thing.
Well, you go there, tinyblundersbigdisasters.org or .com, and it'll get you to the place. And he's Jared Knott. I guess you can Google him, too. And there you have it. Fascinating book. I know that the sequel is going to come out, and I'll talk to you then, I guess, huh?
I appreciate it very much. Thank you. It was an honor.
Thank you, Jared. You take care. Well, there you have it for today. That was damn interesting, I believe. I'm going to be back again tomorrow with a brand new show. That's not a promise. That's a threat. And I hope that you join me then and bring a gift for a change. My God, you come empty-handed every time. A simple bottle of wine would have done it. Would have sufficed. But did you think of that? No. No. Because you figure, well, this is a radio thing. You can't appreciate the gift anyway. Yes, I can. Yes, I can. You can send it to me. You don't know my address. But if you send me an email, I may give you my address. But maybe I'll give you a phony post office box or something. But I want your gifts. You can reach me, by the way, by going to ronvandamshow@gmail.com. That's ronvandamshow@gmail.com. If you've written a book or you've done something really incredibly interesting, I probably have no use for you, but you never know. So you could be a guest on the show. You don't know. You don't know. Or if you have any ideas about a segment you'd like to hear on the show or a certain topic you would like me to lampoon, well, just do that at ronvandamshow@gmail.com. And I thank the Gmail people for letting me be a part of their organization. The Gmail people. I'm one of the Gmail people. Really? It's so funny. I also have an AOL email account. And I was talking to a young lady on the phone, and she said, well, we can send you the information, what's your email address? And I told them at AOL.com. And she said, oh, my God, I didn't think anybody still had AOL. I have AOL, too. Well, marriage bells were a-ringing. No, they weren't. I'm already married, so that doesn't work. But there aren't many of us left. And I guess there's a reason for that. I don't know what it could be. It's fine. AOL is fine. LOL. LOL.com. Have yourselves a wonderful day. I'll be with you again tomorrow. Until then, I wish you peace.